This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, local media met BC's Attorney General and Deputy Premier Minister Sharma in front of the courthouse in the morning of June 23rd to talk about the virtual bail hearings program in British Columbia, marking its five-year anniversary since its inception as a pilot project in northern BC. The virtual bail hearings program in BC includes two digital courtrooms operated by the provincial court, enabling judges, crown prosecutors, and defense lawyers from across the province to participate in virtual hearings. For local access, the program utilizes 112 RCMP detachments and municipal police departments throughout the province, so that accused individuals in remote northern towns can easily connect to the virtual courtrooms by entering a video-equipped room at their local detachment. The virtual bail program was initially designed to address logistical challenges within the justice system during the COVID-19 pandemic, and then the program expanded province-wide. While the program has received positive feedback for improving efficiency and reducing delays, several concerns have also emerged. Issues including access to technology, technical difficulties during hearings, and the perception of impersonality are important considerations for those involved.
So I'm so excited to be here in Smithers. The virtual bail has been going on for 5 years. It's something that really was a pilot project here up north that was so successful that we expanded it across the province. And the idea of virtual hearings is you can actually unlock the potential of the court without having to travel. And I know up north, people down south don't really appreciate the distances between courthouses and how complicated that be, especially in the winter. So virtual bail has been a really good addition to up north that was so successful in terms of how it made trials go faster, helped judges not have to travel or court process not have to travel. And it's better for public safety because people expect their court systems to work on time.
Because it has been 5 years since it's started, what has been a lot of the reactions from both the people in the justice system as well as those who have utilized the virtual bail hearing to be able to attend their court dates?
Yeah, what we heard, even I was at a welcoming ceremony last night and I got to hear from some of the judges about the work. It's really unlocked a lot of things that just weren't possible before. If we had to reckon with the weather and the long travel distances to run a hearing, then sometimes there were delays, there was issues with transporting people, and it just was a tough process that resulted in a lot of delays in the justice process. So it affected public safety in the end. So since it's been running, it's just meant that a judge could be here in Smithers and hearing a case that's in another community far away. And so the trials keep happening. So justice is working in a different way.
Kind of looking into the future, are there any other plans to further expand the virtual bail hearing system or any additions to the system that are in the works?
Yeah, we're always looking. One of my key focuses is court modernization. People expect public safety. They expect the justice to work well. And there's so many ways that technology can unlock that. And virtual hearings are one way, but we can think about that in a lot of different ways, whether it's family proceedings we just launched with the Supreme Court. Better ways to have family proceedings virtual, so people that are very sensitive things, like if you're dealing with a child that's giving testimony or it's a sensitive case that you don't actually have to go in, you can give it virtually. And I think that gives them better emotional support to the person, but it also saves costs and travel time for people instead of having to present themselves. So we're always looking at ways to expand that. And I think it just, once we equip all the courtrooms, which we had done since COVID with the virtual technology, and they're equipped, it unlocks a whole bunch of things. So we're constantly working on that expansion.
Minister Sharma was also in Smithers to talk about the Chronic Property Offending Intervention Initiative, or CPOI. This initiative builds on the Repeat Violent Offending Intervention Initiative, REVOI, which has led to a 50% decrease in police interactions with participants since its 2023 launch, benefiting over 400 high-risk offenders, according to a UBCM report. So while REVOI employed specialized teams to monitor offenders and connect them with necessary services, the new CPOI targets property crime and public disorder in communities like Kelowna, Nanaimo, and Nelson, focusing on five identified individuals in each area. The provincial budget also allocates $67 million over 3 years for the Safer Communities Action Plan, which reinforces the government's commitment to enhancing public safety in British Columbia. Here's Minister Sharma.
Yesterday announced, along with our public safety measures, the Chronic Property Offender Initiative. This is in response to a lot of municipalities and small business owners that have been saying that chronic property offenders are a problem. And usually what they tell me is they know it's the same two people or three people that are causing most of the harm. So the Chronic Property Offending Initiative is going to create hubs across this province that circles around these chronic property offenders that are doing the most damage to communities and small businesses. Basically stop that by circling around them, either with increased criminal justice pressure or with some resources that they may need to change their life.
You mentioned in the press release enhanced enforcement. What does that actually look like?
It's worked. We had a model with the Revoy program, and that was a model that we used where it basically you have Crown Counsel, the RCMP, and a corrections officer circling around people that are causing the most issues. In that case, it was the violence was a factor with their criminality. But this one, it'll be chronic property offending. And so with the enhanced enforcement, you just have people circled around these individuals with the hub that can either lead to quicker responses if the person is causing issues, or directed supports to help them with the mental health needs or whatever that they are struggling with, to get them on a different path. So these kind of things about enhanced enforcement around particular individuals that are causing the most harm, either to themselves or community, I think it is shown to work. So that's the reason for the expansion of that program.
And I noticed Smithers wasn't on the list. I'm wondering if there's a reason why, or if it will be in the future.
Yeah, so we, the idea is to be regional, and I take the point that it isn't here in Smithers, but the one in Terrace that will serve the area. So what we find in throughout the province, and this is made out by a lot of our stats, is it's sometimes the same individuals that travel between towns or are known in different areas. So the idea is to circle around those people. So the town of Smithers will be served by that hub.
Yeah, you're using the term circle around, and so I guess I'm just wondering if that means, something more formalized, or actually maybe less formalized, mm-hmm. something much more sort of casual. Like you said, usually they'll know their names. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you have that regional information, but then is it also like mental health supports? Like, are people kind of responding when they get a call, mm-hmm. a 911 call? Is it going to mental health supports if that's what's needed?
Yeah, so the way it works is that there's like the Crown Counsel that's assigned to files. There's a police officer and the probation officer inside the system. With CPOI, there'll also be other support teams mm-hmm. that are dependent on the community. And because their files have been selected into this program, the responses are individualized. So the plan that's made for that person from all those people connected to it will be different depending on the needs, right? So I'll give you an example in Revoy. One of the stories that I heard about how that program worked was that there was an individual that was causing a lot of problems, and then that situation violence. But what they discovered when they circled around him was that he wasn't keeping on his medication when he was released, mm-hmm. right? So when he was incarcerated, he had a regular program of the medication he needed, and it wasn't being followed. So just by that intense enforcement and focus, they were able to figure out the checks and balances needed to keep this person stable for longer. So it's a bigger solution for that person. So although there's not one solution for CPOI, it'll be enough resources to focus on that person.
So are you working with regional detachments, like a point person of regional detachments then? Or are you working with like the situation table here in Smithers, for instance?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So the way the hubs are set up is you really rely on the local law enforcement or communities to identify the people. Lots of times people know their names. Yeah. Like it's a very known thing. And mm-hmm. I hear that in every community I go to. It's the same 15 people. I could tell you who they are. So that's exactly the knowledge that we're using to put those people in that program mm-hmm. so we can target the resources the most effectively. The big difference between the repeat violent offender in the CPOI program is I think you will need different supports for enforcement, because the reality of our justice system is that if you smash a window, you're not going to get life in prison, right? It's not how it works, right? But we do need to figure out what the solution is, whether it's some form of incarceration or some form of support for that person that gets them off that path.
Thank you to Attorney General Nikki Sharma for taking the time to speak with CICK News and local news Tuesday morning in front of the courthouse in Smithers, BC. In light of the upcoming municipal elections in the province, I sat down to speak with Mayor Gladys Attrill to reflect on her time in local government. As she prepares to step down and not seek re-election, we speak about her experiences, the challenges she faced, as well as her dynamics within council, what works, what didn't, and what lessons she learned. What stood out to me was Mayor Attrill's belief in the value of local governance and what residents can consider as they approach the polls this fall.
When you were first elected as mayor, what were the challenges that inspired you to take on the role?
Well, I was already on council, so it was my second term. I was elected in 2018 as councillor for the second time. And shortly after that, there was sort of a domino effect. Our MP at the time, Nathan, said he would not seek re-election. Taylor was our mayor, and it started a thought process for Taylor. And at some point, it became clear he would seek the nomination, and that process started to unfold. So then you have to think, well, either I can take whatever happens with whoever the next mayor is, I could leave, or I could run. Mm-hmm. And with those choices, I made the decision that if Taylor was successful and left council, that I would let my name stand for mayor. So when he got the nomination, I let my fellow councillors know I would let my name stand for mayor. So that ought to have been October 2019. That's when Taylor was elected. Soon thereafter, there was a pandemic. So by-elections were canceled by the province. So I sort of just remained in that acting role until there was a by-election in 2020 when the province allowed there to be. So it was a long process, a little bit unwieldy. Yeah. But I didn't start out that term with a desire to be mayor. I was content as a councillor with a mayor that I enjoyed working with. Once those circumstances changed, then I had to figure it out. And so that's sort of what prompted me, you know, in addition to being committed to council and the community, but there was a change in what was going on. I've been on council for 12 years. It's been an amazing experience. I love this town. It's my hometown. My soul is here. And at the same time, I had to think whether or not I thought I had the energy to go full bore for 4 more years, and if I wanted to do that, and I had to conclude no. Yeah. When I think about what some of my colleagues deal with in other communities in British Columbia, where you could have very dysfunctional councils can have very dysfunctional mayors, and it doesn't matter, it doesn't work. That's just not been the circumstance here. It doesn't mean it's a council that agrees all the time, but it's a council that actually knows how to disagree well. You know, I just realized it's my time to step away, and so I had to make that decision.
When you look back, is there anything that you thought, in my time as mayor, I'm going to accomplish X?
So after I was elected, we did in our first strategic planning process identify as a priority what was then called a cultural center. That captured my heart. There is no doubt about it. I worked very hard on that, and it didn't happen. We are sitting here 12 years later. We do not have a cultural center. We now are in play for a library, mm-hmm. which was a portion of that. So, you know, that is something that I wish we could have accomplished. Yeah. I think it would serve the community well. I mean, it's a community building project. Art and culture are part of the soul of a community. And I wish that we were big enough to be able to do that. However, that's not the way it goes. Mm-hmm. And we're working toward one part of that now with the library project.
I've seen Councillor Bukema has announced that he's going to run for mayor as well. Do you have any words for people in this town who vote, who know you as their mayor, but are looking for the next 4 years ahead of Smithers? How would you encourage them to vote?
Well, I think thoughtfully. And you know, some of the things we've just been talking about, what would enable a council to function is that there's respect at the table and that there's some experience at the table. We are in throes of change. In the last election, we saw many councils uprooted. We had 4 new members at the last council. That could have actually gone really badly with the individuals that came and their intelligence, their humility, their willingness to learn. It didn't go badly. That's not the case everywhere. So I do think having experience at the table matters.
Anything that I didn't ask that you want to include?
Yeah, one thing, and that is someone else asked me, what am I most proud of? And it seems like maybe not the flashiest thing, but I mentioned we worked very hard at getting this organization in a good state. Mm-hmm. In our strategic priorities, one thing that we identified was organizational excellence. And we put a lot of energy into that. And while it might not sound very dramatic to someone looking in, if you don't have good people in the organization, none of your other priorities will be achieved. You have to have quality staff who can work together well, who are interested in the goals of the community in order to get stuff done. I think that's it. We actually have a really good staff team. They're intelligent, they're well-trained, and I would encourage people, when you see town staff around, say hi, chat with them. They're also Smithereens who are super proud of the community, who work really hard on behalf of citizens. And there is a joy that people have in making fun of civil servants. So jokes you can enjoy, but actually engage with the staff, see what they're doing, and recognize that they work hard, from encouraging small plants to grow, to running the arenas and the airport, the fire hall, our works department. There's a really good team here, and I am actually really, really proud of that.
Thank you to Mayor Attrill for taking the time to speak with me. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.